Okay, let's get this started. You are listening to a Patreon exclusive episode of the Blockchain Socialist Podcast, where I give my take on centralization versus decentralization when it comes to left politics. And I sort of use software and blockchain-based notions of centralization and decentralization as a bit of a framework for understanding how maybe we on the left can also think about decentralization and centralization. And remember that if you are a patron of the podcast, then you can suggest new topics or questions you'd like me to answer in a similar way that I'm going to do for this episode. So if you have any questions that you really like me to tackle, then feel free to post it in the comments in the Patreon post, or to message me directly, or to put it in the Patreon channel on the Discord. So let me know what you guys think and what you'd like me to answer. But for today, we're going to talk about centralization and decentralization. So yeah, hope you enjoy. So as you guys, I'm sure, are very well aware, the term decentralization and centralization get thrown around a lot when it comes to the cryptocurrency discourse. It's been thrown around in some of the most, in my opinion, meaningless ways, to the point that the word has sort of lost its meaning in that space and what it actually is. But we'll get to that in a bit. What I want to talk about first is talk about decentralization and this conflict with centralization when it comes to left politics. So when we think about socialism, which let's broadly define as the abolition of private property and worker control of the means of production, you can sort of separate it into two main branches. For simplicity's sake, let's say we got anarchism on one side, specifically left anarchism. Of course, we're not talking about anarcho-capitalist bullshit. And on the other side, we have communism, the branch that is more influenced by the work of Karl Marx. And of course, as we know, these two branches sort of collide with each other quite a bit. They have their own ideas when it comes to a plethora of different political issues and how to reach power and how to move beyond capitalism. And usually how it's sort of portrayed is that anarchism is sort of the no government socialism, and communism is basically seizing the government and the states will wither away type of socialism. So generally you get this impression that anarchism equals decentralized and communism equals centralized. Of course, I would sort of argue against that, and I think it's a bit, you lose a lot of the nuance by using such a broad term to describe what are very, very complex and like rich political theories and histories. But if we go a little bit deeper, when we think about anarchism, of course, we think of Proudhon, who was the father of anarchism. He famously said that his ideas boil down to federation or decentralization. I think this was more later in his life. He advocated more for a type of federated type of governance structure, whereas I think earlier he was more on the no government side, if that makes sense. But he doesn't specify really the type of decentralization when he says that. It sort of potentially he means like the governmental type, but it isn't very quite clear. And I think it's rooted in this issue where we say the words similar, honestly, to the crypto people, but we don't really properly define what we are talking about when we say decentralization more specifically. Also, just wanted to add, he famously said that property is theft, which I would love if you guys could share with your anarcho-capitalists in your life and your right-wing libertarians. If you have any friends that are like that, or if you peruse any sort of online communities, you can always talk about how the father of anarchism actually said that property is theft and not taxation is theft. So anarchism is really based on mutual assistance, voluntary association, as opposed to using laws and force in their minds to get their political agenda across. So they were very, very focused on using the, I would say, the economic realm to achieve political power. And this is opposed to communism, or the work really of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, who were advocating more for a seizure of political power. So this is talking about the dictatorship of the proletariat. Communism, it has a very, very rich history, of course, and there's a lot of different strains within it, just like anarchism. But if we, let's think about communism first off in the Bolshevik socialism, which is really characterized by the use of the vanguard party and democratic centralism. This is really in particular from the work of Lenin and his thoughts. And central planning and the use of Gosplan in the USSR. You should definitely check out the previous episode, a Patreon episode that I did on planning versus markets, if you want to learn about my thoughts on central planning versus markets. Basically, I think it's a bit of a fallacy to say that capitalism is purely market-based and communism is purely planning-based, and that actually, under capitalism, capitalist firms actually use quite a lot of planning in order to be profitable. So you can check that episode. But many on the communism side, or on the Marxist side, they will say that they'll cite the failures of other revolutions, like the Spanish Revolution and other more anarchist-led movements, as a reason why decentralization leads to death of the movement, and that centralization is necessary and was necessary during the time of the USSR to preserve the project from invasions from other countries, to prevent the, you know, sort of a counter-revolution, etc. However, at the same time, I want to be clear that there have been a lot of attempts at trying to get away from this sort of Leninist line of thinking, which is perceived to be a more centralized attempt at socialist struggle. So, there's a lot of different people out there who are working on trying to find ways of doing socialist struggle without needing to rely on a vanguard party, without needing to rely on a group of professional revolutionaries or something like that. But so when the left, I think, is thinking about centralization and decentralization, it's usually referring to different thoughts about the role of the state and the dictatorship of the proletariat and revolutionary struggle. Or at least that's sort of a big difference in anarchists versus communist circles. So this is what really, I think, leads to a lot of the infighting. Communists see the state as a referee for a class conflict in which the bourgeoisie is clearly winning under capitalism, and in which they sort of have taken hold of the state. And so for them, it's a need to focus on the seizure of the state and the seizure of political power in order to make change. Whereas anarchists see the state as inherently exploitative, and, you know, they advocate for the immediate abolition of the state. And so I think that's sort of what is meant when it comes to centralization versus decentralization. It's I think very closely linked to the role of the state, and it's very closely linked to the role of the actual struggle and the vanguard and things like dictatorship of the proletariat. But these are all slightly different issues, and I think need like more attention in terms of how we tackle them. But at the same time, the word decentralization has also been co-opted by free market advocates, seeing capitalism as the ultimate form of decentralization, which is ironically ignoring the centralization of wealth and power under capitalism that sort of naturally sort of happens. They see the US was decentralized and the USSR was centralized, which is, I mean, pretty ridiculous when you consider the size of the US military. If you consider the amount of influence they have over the world, it's kind of a silly thing to think that. But because of the fall of the USSR, was considered due to the US beating the USSR and the US considered as being decentralized, it molded the definition of the word to mean also the rise, well, I guess to closely link it to the rise of neoliberalism and its penchants for public-private partnerships and privatization of industries that were maybe historically under state control. And that was sort of seen as a form of decentralization. But what ends up happening is that you get a centralization of wealth and power under capitalists who have no democratic oversight, as opposed to maybe there was a centralized public entity or public utility service that handled a particular industry or a particular utility, but at least they were under some sort of democratic control or oversight. So I think there's like this, larger aspect of thinking left is centralized and right is decentralized. But also within left-wing circles, we have this anarchists are decentralized, but communists are centralized type of idea a bit, if I can like very crudely describe that. But so in order to tackle this issue, and a way that I've been trying to think about how the left should handle it is, I've been trying to look at how decentralization, centralization is defined in software and in the blockchain space, because actually they do have some pretty interesting ways of defining different types of decentralization that I think could be pretty helpful as a framework for thinking about left-wing movements. And so specifically, I sort of used Vitalik Buterin's Medium post on decentralization, in which he defines three different types of decentralization. You have architectural decentralization, which is basically the idea of, or it's the property of how many physical computers make up a system, and how many of those computers can it tolerate breaking down at any single time while also working. I think this definition is probably the most close definition to the way that crypto people sort of use it, or what it actually means in a specific like cryptocurrency or blockchain project context. Which I say this because you also have another type of decentralization is political decentralization, which is about how many individuals or organizations ultimately control the computers that the system is made up of. So when you're looking at like these different type of ICOs, they love to talk about how decentralized they are, but a lot of them are still structured very similarly to any sort of traditional corporation or startup, which is probably one of the most centralized structure that we have in our economy and in our lives, is the traditional corporate structure. But the third type of decentralization is asking about whether does the interface and data structures that the system presents and maintains looks more like a single monolithic object or an amorphous swarm? So basically, if you cut a system in half, including both the providers and users of that system, will both halves continue to fully operate as independent units? So when it comes to blockchain, it's politically decentralized, at least according to Vitalik, because no single entity controls them. It is architecturally decentralized because there's no infrastructural central point of failure, but they are logically centralized because there's one commonly agreed state and the system behaves like a single computer. So that's sort of the thing sometimes I think about when you talk about blockchains, is that actually there is some centralization in the form of the data standards that are used to come up with consensus, which I think is really interesting, because if you think about the Soviet model for coming to consensus, it was democratic centralism, which is basically like if over 50% of people voted on something, then basically everybody has to like move forward with that single proposal, which if you think about it, is in itself its own form of decentralized consensus. I take this from the work of Crypto Communism, actually, by Mark Alizart, who I interviewed previously. But he makes this interesting point that democratic centralism and decentralized consensus are very similar, in the sense that democratic is basically the same as decentralized, and consensus is the same as centralism. Consensus is basically the process of moving forward to do a single action within a larger community. But so if I continue, when it comes to the reasons for decentralization, there are three reasons he cites. There's fault tolerance. So you want to use a decentralized system because they are less likely to fail accidentally because they rely on many separate components that are not likely to fail at the same time. You have attack resistance. So decentralized systems are actually more expensive to attack and destroy or manipulate because they lack sensitive central points that can be attacked at much lower cost than the economic size of the surrounding system. So you can't like target the administrator of the blockchain because there is none. It's geographically spread out around the world. And the third type of resistance is collusion resistance, in the sense that it is much harder for participants in decentralized systems to collude to act in ways that benefit them at the expense of other participants, whereas the leaderships of corporations and governments collude in ways that benefit themselves but harm less well-coordinated citizens, customers, employees, and the general public all the time. Of course, I don't think that, you know, I think in the case of like a lot of different decentralized applications, especially in blockchain like Bitcoin, they've shown to not really be collusion resistant. You see that miners have colluded in a lot of these, and in both Bitcoin, we've seen it, and in Ethereum, because they have an interest. I think one of the things that sort of Vitalik misses in this analysis maybe is sort of class interest. But I think that's for another time. But if we think about this framework of decentralization and the left, what comes to mind for me is the losses of Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn in the US and UK, and how their loss also caused a subsequent loss of energy in many left-wing movements. To show that we were very hopeful and very dependent on the success of these high-profile people. And when they didn't make it, because obviously capitalism has a way, or capitalists are going to do everything that they can so that they don't have a socialist running the government, we sort of lost hope a little bit, I think, and became a little bit more depressed. And we sort of moved towards, at least now I see online, a tendency to complain about each other in like very almost infantile ways at times. But so when I think about especially political decentralization using the framework that Vitalik sort of outlined, this is really, I think, a pretty interesting thing to think about, because ideally we would want to have many leaders that can take over for others whenever necessary, so that whenever Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn loses, we're not stuck at ground zero again. So when I say decentralization as like something that the left should consider more, I think partially it's about like growing the movement, of course, but it's also about having more people who are getting close to the levers of power. The left tends to prop up a few leaders to represent them in politics, put a lot of hope and energy on the success of them, and then it doesn't work out, and then we don't really know where to go. From a strategic standpoint, I think it makes more sense to support broad, decentralized movements a whole lot more than when it comes to specific leaders. When I think about the other two types of decentralization, so architectural decentralization, what I think is like sort of the equivalent in the left-wing movement is a mass movement and a class consciousness as a type of decentralization, as it creates not a single point of failure in that way, right? Because if we remember, architectural decentralization is about the amount of computers that a system makes up. I think we can similarly think about left-wing movements and like how many people and how many comrades they're making up, and having, you know, a broad class consciousness, in which class consciousness is decentralized and distributed amongst a lot of different people throughout throughout your country or whatever you're really talking about, then I think you are more resistant. So I think socializing and democratizing that knowledge for left-wing movements in order to have people always ready to take up the mantle is really, really important. And then when it comes to logical decentralization, centralization, I think it's maybe a little bit complicated, because I think right now the left is very logically decentralized because there's a lot of different tendencies and a lot of different schools of thought in terms of achieving power for socialism. And that's not to say I'm not like for or against having that. I think there's probably a good reason or a need to having this type of decentralization or to having a many different viewpoints and ideas when it comes to tackling different issues. But I think having a little bit of logical centralization could be beneficial. And what I mean by logical centralization is having militancy and discipline within your movement. So in the case of, if we're using this, you know, very maybe silly analogy, with a blockchain, it's very logically centralized in that every single node in the network knows exactly the rules that every other node abides by and can communicate with it accordingly, and they all have more or less the same job. So one node is not very different from another node, and they use these data standards to communicate with each other. I think the left has similar data standards, or they have similar, in the sense, agreed upon concepts and agreed upon ideas and accomplishments that we want to reach, but we haven't yet been able to get past our logical decentralization or these sort of the all these different movements and trends and tendencies that are inside of what we would call the left. We haven't been able to centralize all of that manpower to achieve significant goals in the recent past. So I think we sort of need to think about how can we logically centralize in a way that help us achieve our goals while also respecting the many tendencies that exist. And so I think by maybe using these as sort of a framework for thinking about how the left thinks about its own political movement, I think we will also achieve similar types of resistance. I think we will achieve fault tolerance, attack resistance, and collusion resistance if we have these different types of decentralization. We're resistant. We can be resistant to collusion because we have a platform of trust with each other. We have our own standards and concepts that we all agree upon. So it makes it more difficult for basically psyops to occur and to collude, or for, you know, people that are within the movement who are maybe co-opted, or, you know, they have a change of heart or something like that. And I think having this decentralized school of thoughts when it comes to left-wing politics can also actually make us very fault tolerant, because I think a part of this being fault tolerant, I think what would be useful is if we had multiple narratives on the left that are going on at the same time, because in that way, we have multiple struggles to shift resources towards whenever maybe one of them isn't successful, but we have, you know, five other different narratives that we can continue on, and it doesn't really affect the movement as a whole. So in a way, almost like diversifying our risk by having several different movements at the same time, but also logically centralized together to be able to coordinate. So really, it's a really big coordination issue amongst the left. So personally, I think really the left should embrace the term decentralization and try to co-opt it back for enacting the types of policies that we would like to see. So we can use it to mean, rather than decentralization in a more abstract sense, which actually ends up being centralizing more power and wealth towards capitalists, by using it to mean to decentralize power and wealth away from the centralization of capitalists. I think when people look at income inequality, and even if you're not maybe a socialist or an anarchist or particularly left-wing, I think a lot of people are still quite concerned about it. So yeah, so those are some of my thoughts when it comes to decentralization in politics for the left. I think we could maybe use frameworks of decentralization in other places to help us think about what exactly we want to centralize and what we want to decentralize, and I think make that combination. I don't think it's not really about decentralizing everything, because in all contexts, that doesn't necessarily mean much, and decentralization itself is not some sort of socialist goal or some anarchist goal or some goal for reaching some sort of post-capitalism, but it is a tool, and it is like a framework for us to think about how we organize, and that's just, I think, a very practical a very practical thing to think about. So yeah, those are my thoughts. Let me know what you guys think. Do you agree with this type of assessments? Do you think there are more types of decentralization that we can think about that weren't outlined in Vitalik's post or that I've mentioned? Let me know, because I think it would be really interesting to think about that and to talk about that. So yeah, thanks again for being patrons and for providing your financial support. It's really, really, really helpful for me. And it really encourages me to keep going. Thanks to your financial support, I've been able to pay for someone to drastically improve my website. If you haven't checked it out already, I got a new logo. It's much more organized and it's way more easy to find things, I think, and just loads a whole lot faster. So I was able to use those funds to pay for that. So I was able to get someone professional to help me out. So that was super helpful. Thank you guys. And yeah, I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you.